Welcome to the Round 20 Super Coach Coach Podcast. My name's Marcus, and we're joined by FB Donkey this week. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, mate. Good to be here.
I think our patrons heard from you a couple of weeks ago, but otherwise you haven't been on the main show for a few weeks. So why don't you connect us with Mark's Tales from the Road, and then we'll do Around the Grounds. Where have you been? What have you been up to? How's life?
I spent most of the last few weeks in the Northern Territory. Absolutely loved Darwin. Just the food up there was amazing. And heaps to do, Kakadu, Litchfield. It was all just unreal. Absolutely loved it. Swimming every day. The weather was just sensational. Then we decided to head over to Cairns. So we booted through Outback Queensland over about a week. And we arrived in Cairns a few days ago. And yeah, we're staying at some friends' place. We've got a nice big property here to stay on. And we'll go do some week trips and day trips, and I think we're going to be here for a couple of months. It's pretty nice up here, lots to explore. So, yeah, and been following my footy as well. Unfortunately, the Bombers, no good on the weekend against the Giants. We're probably not ready for finals. Young group, would have been nice to make them though, and I guess we're still a chance, but that was a big one.
So sunny weather is pretty good for helping to put things in perspective, isn't it? Let's just brush a big game off. I like it. All right. And it sounds like we get a bit more of you on the run home as well if you're in one location with some 4G, which is exciting. Good to be able to catch up with you a little bit more. So in terms of the Supercoach world, how are you tracking, mate? How is the weekend that's just been?
Weekend that's just been, I scored 23.90. I think that you could have had no updates from me from about a month and my ranking would be the same. I've just been hovering around 3,500, just barely moving from week to week. So just putting in okay scores without getting that big score that I needed. A few things have gone wrong over the journey with injuries and Mills missing. It's been pretty painful, but yeah, fully upgraded down to one trade. Hopefully don't need to use it this week. And did Dusty to Bolton last week that I thought was going to be a good move, but they decided to play Parker in the midfield instead of Bolton. 42 was a very, very disappointing score.
Yeah, that was very frustrating. I also brought in Bolton, Mark, and that's just not what you want from a first score. I was actually excited about bringing him in with Dusty out. 420k, thought you ripper. Then the breaks, I mean, again, against Geelong was always going to be tough. Playing a lot of time out of the forward line was definitely no good for him, but hopefully turns things around on the run home. The opposition shouldn't be Geelong every week, so Frio this week should bring some good scores. North the week after, GWS in the second last round, and then Hawthorn to finish. So in the scheme of things, a decent draw, Mark. We'll keep our fingers crossed along with
It's all about role though, mate. Like, he just didn't get the midfield minutes that he'd had previously in the year when he was scoring really well. And I think Prestia played half a game on the weekend, so he'll be back this week. And Parker played pretty well, so he might struggle to get that role back.
Yeah, I think though, even when he plays midfield, he's still a bit of that hybrid forward. And I think winning games in that particular role, even if he's pinch hitting mid but spending a bit of time up forward, he could still hopefully eke out a pretty decent score. But you need some wins if you're playing that forward position. I agree with you. Over a longer stretch, I'd be nervous. But I think 4 weeks, four wins, we'll keep our fingers crossed. That's all we can do at this stage, unfortunately. No side swapping primos.
Not now, definitely not. That would put that would put Tigers back in the finals mix, which it'd kind of be nice to have them be a little bit disappointed this year, wouldn't it?
Like, yeah, that's true.
Three out of four grand final wins. I think I had one of my friends at the start of the year saying that he wanted to win the grand final this year so that they could get into the conversation of best ever team. And so to just really pull that rug completely from under them would be nice. Sorry to the Tigers supporters out there, but you guys have had your fun for a bit. Tigers can blame injuries this year, right? Like, they've had just a crazy amount of injuries. And I'm sure Tigers supporters know this already, but they can also be very thankful that they've had an insanely good run of injuries over the last few years.
Hey, look, I'm a Geelong supporter, so we've had 2 years of heartbreak at their hands, so you won't find me complaining about anything that's been suggested so far.
Must be terribly heartbreaking sitting in the top four every year for your entire life.
All right, I scored 24-16. That was my Supercoach week. Apart from bringing in Bolton, I also brought in Jared Lyons. He had 33 touches, 130 DT, and only 100 Supercoach off the back of, I think, 7 or 8 or 9 clangers. It was huge. Very, very unfortunate. Could have been a really good upgrade otherwise. Still, finally moving off Tim Taranto is good. He ended up scoring 53. So that was still a pretty good upgrade, even though my other option was to bring in Danger, who smashed it. We'll hope that Lions comes home strong. Brisbane have a really nice run home, so that was good. And probably the other nice score from the week, Steel side bottom with 109. Really quite nice after two poor weeks. Got back into the midfield with Pendlebury going down.
And you were planning on trading side bottom at some stage, if I remember the chats correctly, from getting into the weekend.
Yeah, well, I was a bit nervous that he might be scoring 60s for the rest of it, and I decided that Taranto to Lions was more attractive than, you know, maybe side bottom up to Danger. We'll see how that holds. I would have been better off doing side bottom up at this stage. That was just how huge Dangerfield's score was. But Lions has some pretty punchy scoring potential on the run home. So
why don't you have Danger? I thought we talked about getting Danger last time I was on the show.
Okay. All right. Let's not rub any more salt into those wounds. As a Geelong supporter, it is hard enough watching the games. When you've got a big player, especially in the forward line scoring 170s, it's been pretty painful. Anyway, we won't talk about
that. What's your rank, mate? I don't think you said your rank.
My rank is 1590th overall, so I've been treading water, but Mills and Marshall out this week. So I need to keep a little bit of perspective, even though I like to think my team's doing really, like, it's a good team. I've been struggling a little bit with not having everybody on park, so hopefully this week will be finally a move up the rankings. I've got two trades left. I don't have Taranto, Cripps, Danaher types anymore, although I guess I got Bolton now. You know, we talk about compromised teams on the run home. I'd like to say this is a pretty uncompromised team now. I'm missing Dangerfield and Zorko, but apart from that, the team is pretty stacked. My worst midfielder is Josh Kelly now, which I'm very happy about. It's a nice change. All right, we've spent a bit of time rambling about our own teams, but this is the time of the season. We're heading into Supercoach finals. A lot of us are running low on trades, so, you know, we're feeling a bit of airtime. In terms of the overall leader of our Supercoach coach group, that's still Emily's team, Supercoach Mama, sitting first overall and holding on to that number one spot. She has 4 weeks to come home hard. She's been up in and out of the top for a while now. It was featured on the Supercoach pod much earlier on in the season, so it's really nice to see her hang on. Black on White is coming eighth, and Clem's the Bearding Man Buns got hit by a few of those unfortunate COVID injuries, so he's dropped down to 11th, but hopefully he can still finish in some cash. We'll see how he goes. But, yeah, lots to cheer for in terms of the overall stakes and Supercoach coach community members doing really well. Our top scorer for the Supercoach coach public group is DivX Dominators, Cameron's team, who scored 26-68 on the weekend. That was a top 50 round 19 rank, so congratulations to him. And in terms of our Patreon group, the top scorer there was Heath's team, Herbivores, with a 25-89, pushing him up into the top 750, which is nice. And in terms of the overall leader of the comp, it's Zach's team's Patterns General. He scored 25-41, so sitting at 114th overall, with only 160 points separating him and Travis's team, Stylin' and Profiling. And then within another 50 points, there's a couple of teams, Daniel's More Midtime and Josh's Slapnut Magoos. So there's 200 points splitting the top four of our Patreon group as we run into the finish of the Patreon comp for our cash tip at the end of the year. Exciting stuff. All right, this week, Mark, we're going to talk about league finals. We're going to have a bit of chat about Pendlebury, who got injured, and then see what we have time for in terms of luxury upgrades, but relatively short show this week, as you'd expect at this time of year. And we'll start off with league finals strategy and the question from Rowan on Facebook. At what point do we give up on overall rank and go for cash leagues? Now, I think we're certainly at the point where you are aware of whether or not you're in contention for the overall prize or not. So I'd say most people should be able to pivot to cash leagues. If you've got money on the line in your cash leagues, I think anything outside of the, I know, even at this stage, Mark, you know, top 50, top 100, do you start flipping toward cash leagues?
Depends what your goals are, mate. Like, you don't get many chances to finish top 100. If you're sort of in that top even 500, you may be thinking, the most important thing for me is to get as high a rank as possible because I may not get too many chances for this. So it really depends on the individual and what their goals are. And if you're not in cash leagues, then there's a bit of pride on the line, but you may longer term remember your rank being really good rather than beating a couple of mates in the finals. So really, really depends on what your goals are. If you're outside the top 20, you're almost zero chance of winning the 50K at this stage, I would say. So from that perspective, anyone outside the top 20 could potentially pivot towards cash leagues.
That's good advice there. And next one is from at Troy Danaher. He's got three trades left and still with two rookies on field. No cash, though, and in the bottom eight of finals. So faced with that situation, do you go one down, one up, and have one trade left, or hold this week and hope that he makes it through?
So is that the bottom half of the top eight? Basically, if you have a must-win game this week, so if you're finished fifth and you have a rookie on field, I would probably get rid of that rookie and hope to win this week and then just hold on for dear life and get lucky in the last 3 weeks. Like, when you've got a must-win game, most of the time your best bet is to throw everything at it, or at least have, like, maybe even have two plans. Have a throw everything at it plan and have a nah, she'll be right, I can hold on to my trades plan, where if the game order works out well, then you can actually change your plans depending on how well your team's going. But if I had a knockout final this week and that was my only cash league and I didn't have to worry about other leagues, then I would be throwing the kitchen sink at it, especially if I had a rookie on field.
So for anyone who's not familiar with that, what that means, it's probably easier to do the fewer leagues that you have because otherwise you have more competing priorities. But essentially, you're suggesting that as the game scores start coming through, if, let's say, your unique players are scoring 150s or your opponent had a couple of poor scores in the 30s or the 40s, that would give you more confidence to say, well, maybe I don't need to trade this week because, you know, I don't really care about my overall score. I just need one more point than my opponent. So if I start off with a huge lead that I expect to hold, then potentially otherwise attractive trades you might hold off on and make that same evaluation the following week.
That's the theory behind it. It's hard to execute, though, because you'd need the games to all line up. So you need the rookie that you're potentially bringing in for cash to be playing in a later game, and you need the premium that you're potentially targeting to also be playing in a later game, and the players that you're trading out to be playing in later games. So one way to sort of mediate that a little bit would be to bring in a rookie that plays in one of the earlier games. So make that one trade where you're getting the cash because you're going to do that anyway at some stage, and then just hold back on spending the money until the right time comes up. But like I said, like, there's a lot of luck involved with these sort of things with game orders, and I know the game order has been changing around because of the AFL and all this COVID stuff. You need a lot of things to fall into place to actually execute that strategy, and I'm not sure I've ever actually really executed that before, although I've maybe tried to keep it in mind previously.
Otherwise, as a general principle, trading in your first week when you don't have a backup game because you haven't made the top four is definitely a good idea. Whatever trade you do this round will hold for the next few rounds as well. So it's shooting your shot as early as you can while you need to win an elimination, and then you still get the benefit ongoing.
And it's tricky, right? So does that theory move on to people that are playing, that finish in the top four? They have a second chance? But if you lose in that first week, it's really, really hard to come back and win three games in a row in a competitive league. There's also a temptation to really try and get the win this week in those leagues, and then you don't have to worry about trades next week because trades don't matter. You can literally just have a week off where it doesn't matter at all what your team scores. So if you're in the top four, there is some incentive there to sort of throw a fair bit at it as well. But unlike you, Marcus, I think you're the only one anywhere that I know of that actually has trades left. So everyone else doesn't really have a lot of options.
Interesting, you know, what you described in terms of being in a top four position. If you trade early and then it doesn't work out, you might want to trade again next week. So by the time you pop out to the last two games, I guess you're potentially a bit less up your sleeve. The alternative, I guess, is to almost concede game one. If you somehow get through in game one, then all of a sudden you have a ridiculous amount of trades for the last 2 weeks. And otherwise you're forced to use the trade in the second week anyway, which you have been forced to do if you had lost regardless. So I guess that's potentially the other way. And how your decision-making might be guided is also sort of your chance as a favorite in the particular round. So I think if you were starting off much more as a favorite in week one and you're in the top four, I'd say the temptation would almost be to keep the hands off, because if you do get through as the favorite, all of a sudden you're in a really luxurious position. And otherwise, you still have those trades up your sleeve that you didn't touch this week, where if you're not the favorite, then potentially you just give it a bigger crack this week, because if you can somehow get over the line, you won't be in a position where you've got to fight the following week as well as a little bit of an underdog. So that's maybe something to think about.
For sure. And then it gets even more complicated, because you can think, I'm not the favorite this week. I'm probably going to lose. I'm going to need my trades next week. So maybe I just hope for the best and hope to get lucky this week, and then just save my real firepower for next week when I can beat some people from lower in the eight that I might actually be a favorite against. So
that's true too.
Some super complicated decisions. So I think that being on top and being a favorite is the best position to be in, because like you said, you can just sort of ride that favoritism and hope to win this first week. And if things go badly, then you enact your plan going into next week. But most of the other positions have to go early and they have to go harder. And that's what advantages people finishing sort of top couple, or the people that have the best couple of teams in these league situations. And it's interesting talking about this, because we're talking about really pure situations where you're in one league and you are really talking about like one group of rivals. I'm in several cash leagues. I've made the finals of all of them. I've finished different positions in all of them. I can't enact all the strategies at once.
And that's why maybe the more you're in, potentially the tendency would be to shoot your shot earlier, I suppose, so that you get better bang for your buck across all the different leagues you're competing in. So I guess if you hold on to trades, it doesn't get deployed till later, where you might be knocked out of some.
It's weird because I've only got one trade, so I don't have shots to shoot. I have like one player gets injured and then I replace them. That's all I've got. But I think I finished in Cashley in like the five leagues that I care about. I think I finished top four in four of them and sixth in the other one. From that perspective, I won't be shooting a shot this week. I'll be just trying to hold off, just trying to hope to get through. And then I should have, I've got at least four games next week, but hopefully I can have a good week and have a week off in a lot of them.
Now we'll go on to injury questions. And this one's from Chris Todd, one of our Patreons. Thoughts on Fiorini as a POD replacement for Pendlebury, or should he play it safer with a Marshall, Lever, maybe even use DPP and pick up a Menegola? He's got two trades remaining. Pendlebury, obviously, with the fracture in his legs, out for the rest of the season. What do you reckon about Fiorini? We had a couple of questions about him. Do you know much about Fiorini from the Gold Coast?
Yeah, a little bit. About 3 weeks ago, I'm in a draft league where there's just no midfielders available. And about 3 weeks ago, my wife picked him up and has not shut up about him since. So I've heard a lot about Fiorini in the last 3 weeks, because if you got a 70 from a midfielder, you'd be doing well, and he's been getting over 100. I think he had like 39 touches on the weekend or something crazy. So, and has always shown that potential, right? He's always had that real ball winning ability, but just hasn't been able to stick it through for like a really extended period. It's often been he's been dropped or been taken out of that key role because of other players, but he's performing so well, you would hope that Stewie Jew is going to give him a role for the next 4 weeks. And there's definitely a lot of risk, but he's fit, playing well, has the right role, getting a heap of the ball, scoring really, really well. A very weird Supercoach position. My philosophy generally in this situation is to go for more the tried and true players that you know have done it for extended periods before, but we are in a situation where you only have to gamble on a player doing it for 4 weeks. I don't hate this Fiorini selection. What was his price?
$415,000.
So insanely cheap for the results that you're getting from him at the moment. If you're looking for a Pendles replacement, he's super in form. And it's not like he hasn't scored really well before. He just hasn't done it for extended periods of time.
If you're replacing Pendlebury, you're replacing a midfield position, I guess. So, you know, between Marshall, Lever, Menegola, Fiorini, I mean, really, the midfielder is where you want to go, right? Even somebody who has a bit more premium potential in another line like Marshall, at this stage, it's all about best bang for your points on the run home with the dollars you have available, you really don't care too much about position. And so if you have a midfield spot available, it makes sense to start there. And comparing a Fiorini to Marshall, for example, Fiorini seems like a bit more of a sure thing with his role.
Yeah, the upside is potentially higher as well, given Marshall's I know that he can go massive, but given his injury history this year and the fact that when he's come back from injury or games off, he's really taken a while to get going again. Yeah, Fiorini just ahead. You're gambling in any direction.
We had another question from Paul Maltman from Facebook asking about Pendle's replacements under 498K. So if you had a little bit left up your sleeve, but you're still looking for a value option, who might you consider? He was considering Fiorini, but he was also thinking about Hugh McCluggage and Tim Kelly, a couple of names he's listed here.
They were the two that stood out for me as well. Kelly seems to have finally hit a little bit of form, shown a bit in the last few weeks, and McCluggage went through an insanely hot period earlier in the year when Neil was out and has struggled a bit since then. But McCluggage seems like a pretty safe pick. Kelly's had some of the injury concerns this year. McCluggage has at least been fit, and he may have some lower scores, but the lower scores are going to be 80s, not 50s, I would say. So, yeah, if you've got 498, McCluggage has the potential to put in a 120 average over 4 weeks. I don't mind that with the low floor, but still the high ceiling.
Yeah, I like Brisbane's run home too. Hawthorn, Frio, Collingwood, West Coast is a pretty tasty draw for Brisbane. Yeah, Hugh, you'd think it would be a beneficiary from easier run, hopefully. How about Bailey Smith, Mark? He has had 4 out of his last 5 scores be quite good. 126, 75, 124, 104, 141. So definitely getting more time in the middle heading into finals, which is where he was scoring most of his points.
Yeah, it's tricky to know with that Bulldogs midfield still. I mean, it seems like a safe pick, but not a super exciting pick. I haven't watched enough of the Bulldogs in the last couple of weeks to make a really good assessment on that. What about you?
Probably see him as more of a risk than Hugh, just because there's that midfield contention, Dunkley to return as well.
And isn't Treloar due back soonish too?
Yeah, hopefully before finals. So that is something to consider with Bailey Smith. Christian Salem has been a pretty standout performer in the back line. He's had a couple of quiet games, though. He's at 490K. Any temptation on him at all?
Salem, they're going to keep getting the ball in his hand, and Melbourne are definitely going to be competing for finals. I don't mind that selection. Defenders do go through a couple of lower games. I think 490 is pretty fair price, a little bit cheap for Salem.
I think he's a better pick if you're looking for a backline player than a Lever or a Caleb Daniel, even though Caleb had a monster game. I think Caleb is still a bit prone to a poor score now and then.
I guess that there's still a bunch of people that don't have Whitfield, and he was unbelievable in the second half on the weekend, and he missed a game. Was it concussion, sort of migraine stuff, but was back on the weekend scoring really, really well, and he's only 477. So I'd probably have him ahead of all those guys.
Yeah, he certainly seems a bit of a standout at 477. Plenty of options to take a risk on. Out of everyone that we've talked about so far, would you like to sort of give a top three, Mark?
Oh, it depends on your risk for appetite and how much money you have. I think McCluggage and Kelly would be my first two ports of call. And then Fiorini. I think I'd go pure midfielders if you've got that sort of money. Marshall has super upside, but super high risk, I think, given the year that he's had and the way that's played out and the fact that Saints might struggle to make the finals as well. So he's the high risk, high reward sort of play. Whitfield I'd have ahead of anyone, though, at 477 if you don't have him.
Yeah, Whitfield, my top pick as well. Pretty tough after that. I probably haven't watched a heap of Fiorini, so I'll just have to trust the narrative around that. Let's go to the next question from at BWarrell28 on Twitter. Can you name me the best player under 460K? Dropping the price tag down even lower, Mark. A lot of the guys that we talked about were actually around the 470k mark. I guess Fiorini is one that is a little bit cheaper, so he certainly is in there. But if you are looking for a cheap option, Mark, under the 458k mark, who would you have?
I think Dale Thomas, Daisy, is a pretty good pick. Sorry, that's just a joke for BWAS, who was giving us crap on Twitter a couple of weeks ago for recommending Daisy a few years ago. And
I got so confused for a while.
Yeah. Daisy's coming back for a few games, mate. Just go there. It's really, really tricky in that price range. Like, if you're looking for a midfielder, you're gambling no matter which way you go. I mean,
you've got Tim Taranto.
Yeah, Taranto, Davies Uniacke, those sort of guys that maybe could do it for a patch. Tim Kelly, it would be hard to argue, make a case against him, I think.
Gaff.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with those Eagles, right? Because you've got Gaff, Yo, and Kelly all in that, and Shuey all in that same price range. They've all just underperformed over the course of the year. I probably have Kelly ahead in that group. You're really, really struggling in that area. I mean, Tom Green posted a 120 on the weekend, but that is super gambling on a player like that. Huge risk taking on anyone if you have to replace Pendles in that low price range.
I think I would go Taranto, Fiorini, and then maybe a Lockie Hunter would probably be my go-to.
Wow.
Yeah. One poor game being a 56 in round 17, which just cycled out of his price. He's not had an absolutely massive year, but he has some serious upside over a short patch, and 100 across four games should be within his realms of capability.
The other one that you were looking to trade out last week, Steel Sidebottom for 400k, scored 109. Maybe with Pendles out, he does move into the midfield and have a bigger role in that side. There's lots of former premiums that you just got to work out which one might do well. I wouldn't mind having a peg on one of the Eagles guys just because they do have a lot to play for at this stage still.
And look, our ability to give advice, I guess, at this stage of the season is more limited. And the reason why we're throwing out a few more options is obviously variance plays a bigger role when the sample size is smaller. So when we have to make predictions off 11 games versus four, I guess we're a lot more certain saying this player will finish in the top six versus saying, hey, pick me a player for the next 4 weeks. Well, there's going to be a lot that can happen there. So I think the way you should read that is also you can take a few more liberties to take swings at this stage of the year that you otherwise couldn't. I remember Faz picking Mark Lacroix quite a while ago before he retired, and he scored like 160 in his second last game or something like that at home with the Eagles. So a freak game like that can really turn things around. So it's worth it looking at the opposition, but also having a bit of a punt on who you like, because normally you can't do this and have it be a strategically sound pick because you have to hold them for half a year. But you can certainly take the swings with four rounds.
So you're really thinking about depending on your situation, like a Lockie Hunter is, or a Hugh McCluggage are almost the safe picks. The guys that are unlikely to cost you a final. They're just likely to post an okay score. Whereas if you're a bit like what we were talking before, if you were had to win, you might pick someone that has the higher upside. So the Jordan Dugowie, Brayden Fiorini, Tim Kelly, the bang for your buck guys. And realistically, with 4 weeks to go, I don't mind picking someone that's had a recent role change. So like a Dugowie sort of type player. Because you only need them to hold that role for 4 weeks. As you said, it's not like picking someone for 11 weeks that's always going to play in that position.
All right. Should just mention, we got questions about trading Taranto out. If you were going to do that and you didn't have cash in bank, then obviously we've struggled to find equivalent options. You probably shouldn't sideswap him. But if you can upgrade him, I think we've both shown enough hesitation in his scoring that the last four rounds that could deliver you some league wins. So you could go ahead and do that. Two quick ones to finish up the show. This one's from @PharmerJP or Geo on Twitter. Who to replace out of Haynes and Houston? He can pivot to get Bont and bring Laird back or go to a Mills or Lloyd. So I think this is pretty easy. If you can switch Laird back and pick a midfielder instead of a Mills or Lloyd, you should. He's listed Bont as a trade target, so that's fantastic. I think Haynes to Bont would be my move there and hold Houston. What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I mean, Houston did score better on the weekend. He was doing really well at halftime and then slowed down a little bit. He's just proving super inconsistent with his scoring. Haynes, it's really tricky. He's come back and I've got Haynes in my side and he looked great against the Bombers. Like, he looked really, really good in patches. And I think if you just watch the game, You would have, I did anyway. I looked at his score and was just like, what? I thought he would have scored 100. He was really influential, heaps of intercept possessions and provided some run and dash off the halfback line. Yeah, but he's only averaging 70 for the year. So, yeah, I think Houston's more likely to put through four 100-plus games from here. They are similar-ish. And, yeah, I agree with your statement on Bont. If you're looking at Bont versus Mills or Lloyd, it's an easy choice of Bont.
Last question from Hanif on Facebook. Daniel or Whitfield for the run home? I think according to our prior analysis, sounds like we both have Whitfield as the slam dunk here.
Yeah, he was unbelievable in the second half against the Bombers once he got moved to the halfback flank. And given how successful it was, they may continue with that going forward.
All right, let's finish up with a captain's corner, Mark. Who are you looking at this week?
McRae and Oliver. They're my standard two. That's pretty much just go one vice, one captain. And Dangerfield probably needs to be putting his name in that mix now, right? I hate having Danger as my captain. It's way too stressful. He's a vice-captain sort of guy rather than a captain.
Chuck Jack Steele in there as well. Had his first sub-120 game in like 8 matches on the weekend against West Coast, but plays Carlton this week, which should be pretty tasty. If you have Bontempelli, obviously Bulldogs playing Adelaide's pretty tasty as well. And for Tom Mitchell owners, his last 4 against the Brisbane Lions, 119, 155, 159, and 135. So he's another player that you can have a look at.
Definitely. And I guess when do they play? Because he's, again, another vice-captain option. He just has not been reliable enough to put the captain scoring this year.
Yeah, which that's probably the unfortunate part. He plays Brisbane Lions on Sunday at 2:10. So the only, I guess, reasonable backup captaincy would then be Sean Darcy after that with Frio playing the last game of the round. So it probably limits things a bit.
It's kind of weird. Like, so Titchell's been really up and down this year, but generally if a player does have 4 scores, 119 plus in his last 4 games against them, he will probably go 110 plus. Like, it's the probability is quite high of him actually producing, even though he's been inconsistent this year.
But lots of big games against sort of flailing clubs to take a hit at. So Melbourne versus Gold Coast, the last 4 for Clayton Oliver against Gold Coast, Mark, 106, 175, 143, 147. So 3 out of last 4 above 140 is certainly a bit of a standout as well. I think I'd be looking at the Gold Coast-Melbourne game and the Bulldogs-Adelaide game as probably being the 2 places I'd have a crack at. So McRae into Oliver where I'd go with.
So I've got Petrarca and Gorn. I think I'll go Oliver just because he's had the best year, but Petrarca and Gorn players that you should be considering instead of Oliver, or given his record, you just go Oliver ahead of those guys.
So if they were playing first, I would give Petrarca or Gorn a crack and then maybe settle into a McRae or a Bont, but because they're playing second, I think Oliver is a safer C bet than a VC bet when comparing Petrarca and Gorn, who, yeah, they're prone to maybe a bigger score, a bit more than Clayton potentially relative to their other scores, but their ability to score 100 or below is probably higher than Clayton at this stage, who's more reliable for 115, 120 plus.
So I'm playing my 9-year-old in a top 4 clash in a big league this weekend. He makes the decisions, but I press the buttons just cause so he doesn't get lost and lose the wrong player or whatever. Should I rig it against him?
No, Mark.
Okay. Just wanted to check.
You know what happened? You'd try that and then it'd backfire spectacularly.
All these good players on the bench.
All right, with that little nugget, we'll head into the league finals, wishing our listeners all the best of luck. Thank you if you're still tuning on at this stage of the season. Appreciate that it's been a bit painful for some with a lot of COVID incidents and injuries late in the piece and not a lot of trades. So if you're still hanging on, well done and best of luck for the kickoff of your league finals. Any final words from you, Mark?
Just on that, I should mention how so we had Clem, who was leading Supercoach a few weeks ago, and I thought the way that he handled bowing out of contention because of COVID disappointments to be super classy, so well done to him. He may not be listening because he's sort of bowed out of contention a bit, but good on him for doing that. I probably wouldn't have done the same. Not known for my class. And yeah, just making sure that B-Waz really did hear me right. Daisy Thomas, he's your man.
Awesome. And with that, we'll catch you listeners next week. See ya.
See ya. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy. Don't want this get crazy.